I'm Phil C.
And I'm Lynn.
And together,
we're Roman Oz.
Real interviews.
With real people.
On location.
With a great mix of Aussie music.
As requested by the people we interview.
Follow us on Facebook.
Or check us out, romanoz.com.au. All interviews are live.
And on location.
And may vary in audio quality from segment to segment.
So, Phil, what's on the show this week?
Well, Lynn, first of all, we're going to start off with a song, which is something we don't often do.
No, we don't.
And the song is by Vince Brothy.
Mm-hmm, and it's Famine Island.
It is, and it's one of his really popular songs. And he's a popular musician, entertainer, songwriter, and he lives in
Lowhead, Tasmania.
Lowhead, Tasmania, which brings us to our first discussion. Who's it with?
It's Des from the Maritime Museum at Lowhead.
And the reason why I selected Vince Brothy is because he selected a Vince Brothy song straight after it. So we're going to do a little bit of an intro to Vince Brothy. Now, straight after that,
we've got Jeff Diaz from Checkweight.
And he's discussing?
The payload, and one of the subjects is what is tear.
Okay. And then straight after that, we are with a young chap. His name is
Joe. Yes, and we met him at Derby, and he does mountain bike riding.
Very interesting young man.
Yes.
Now, apart from all these wonderful discussions, Lynn, we've also got a great selection of music
as requested by the people we interview.
So, Lynn, what do you think?
On with the show.
My name it is John Strutt. I am the guardian of these young girls. We are sailing on the Thomas Arbuthnot for the sunny shores of New South Wales. Far from the famine workhouses, far from Famine Island. Famine Ireland. Last night the girls, they danced and sang. Now today, they keen their loss. They are gathered like banshees wailing for mothers and fathers, and leaving old Ireland on this Christmas Day, 1849. The days on board falter dry routine, from Sunday prayers to another washing day. The girls, they keep their place very clean and neat, notwithstanding rough weather. They are full of emulation to excel on this day in January 1850. Mr. Davison viewed their accommodation, but the girls give him so many sly pinches, and immediately they look so innocent, the culprits could not be detected. Whereupon he was glad to make his escape on this day, January 18th, 1850. 1850. Wind more free today, we make an eastward course. We shall be compelled to go round Van Diemen's Land. But Biddy Carmody and some other girls was somewhat refractory. Accordingly, I made them a speech on this day, January 21st, 1850. 1850. Last night we anchored off Garden Island. Tomorrow we sail into City Cove. Fatness of my girl, so neat and clean. Please, doctor, savage and cold. For the poor wretches, they work like horses. On this day, February 4th, 1850. From the journal of Dr. C. E. Strutt, I read the story of the Grey's orphan girls. They could only see down the years, from sailing boats to women in space, and see how they've shaped our today. On this day, November 18th, 2005.
G'day listeners, Phil C here. This is Roman Oz and we are in Lowhead in Tasmania and I'm chatting with Des from the Maritime Museum. How are you going today, Des?
Pretty well, yeah. Now you're at the end of the road.
At the end of the road?
Yes.
Why do you say that?
Lowhead's the end of the road because every other tourist thing is on the main highways, so you've got to come out Launceston, and when you get to the end of the road, you're at Lowhead.
Okay, fabulous. What can you tell us? How long have you been living in Lowhead?
Well, I lived here back in the 60s for 5 years and then okay. I went away for 30
uh-huh.
and then I retired back here and I've been back here about 25. So that makes me fairly old, doesn't
so
it?
that means you've been living in Lowhead for a fair lot part fair of your life.
Yes.
So yeah. Tell us all about Lowhead, as much as you can tell us about it.
Well, Lowhead's a very good climate. We call it the Riviera and it's not too hot, not too cold in the winter,
right.
and of course you get a nice weather in the summer,
uh-huh.
but it's a very good climate. It's a beach spot. You've got a river beach, you've got the ocean beach,
mm-hmm.
Not good for surfing, but that's still an ocean beach.
Yes.
Plenty of room on the beaches, good swimming. It has a lot of history, Lowhead.
Okay.
And when when Patterson was sent down here to settle the area, the first thing that happened, the ship that they came on, or the first ship, ran aground not very far from Lowhead.
Okay.
It was anchored at Lowhead off one of the beaches and dragged this anchor overnight and ran ashore or ran onto a shoal. And the first thing they did the next morning was to send two seamen out to Lowhead to the headland and light a fire and put a flag up to warn the other ships of the
okay.
dangers here, because it's a little bit dangerous. There's dangerous reefs in the river.
Okay.
And so, really, it was probably the first place that they sort of settled on land.
Okay.
But they went up, when they got the boat off, they went up into where Georgetown is now. It was called Outer Cove.
Right.
And they set up camp there, but that was only temporary, and they went across to a place called Yorktown.
Okay.
Anyway, so Lowhead has Australia's oldest pilot station.
Right.
I say Australia's oldest government pilot station because they had two services, one in Sydney and Hobart, which were privately run for private boats from private houses.
Okay.
So this was the first government one here. Now, the first that I can find, the first service as a pilot was in 1805, but it was in 1806 when the pilot that was stationed coming here to guide ships in went off when they pirated the Venus. And he went off with them to New Zealand and finished up in Chile, but that's another story. and it's a pretty interesting story too.
Okay.
So they put wooden huts up here for the next pilot.
Right.
And they put wooden little small wooden huts on the shore for the convict boatmen to row the pilot out to the ships.
Right.
And that, they lived in those. The wooden hut for the pilot became, added to that, and it became a building for three pilots.
Right.
And then they wanted to put a fourth pilot on, and the government had just built the first lighthouse.
Okay.
And with convict labour. And so they brought the convict labour down to the pilot station, which is about 1.5k away mm-hmm. from the lighthouse. And they built the building we're in now called Pilots Row.
Right.
And Pilots Row was four conjoined units, four rooms in each unit, and was for four pilots and their families.
Okay.
And so they lived in that. They then built a coxswain's cottage for the coxswain, who was in charge of the boatmen. And so they were the first two buildings, substantial buildings, built of stone
mm-hmm.
With bricks, with some brick walls. And it wasn't till the end of the convict system in 1853 in Tasmania that they built the other cottages across the way for the boatmen, because mm-hmm. They had to employ three people and they wanted better accommodation. The convicts that had just been lived in their wooden huts.
Okay.
And so they built the cottages for the boatmen. They then they built a school, which operated for about 50-odd years. They built another building in the 1900s for the master warden, and they also put a little church up, which was a non-denominational church at that stage.
Right.
So it was a real little village, I suppose. Now, the school had a number of children because you had the children from the lighthouse. The families up there, and there was probably three families up there. You had children from the leading lights, which are just up the river a little bit from us, and they're the two lights that the ships line up when they come into the river, yeah. or the pilot lines up, and the children from there. So, you know, there were 20 or 30 children in the school here for 50-odd years. So,
wow, okay.
So that was that. But anyway, the pilot station itself, over the years, did all the jobs of putting oil in the lamps out in the river lights, repairing the buoys and painting them, all sorts of jobs like that. But, of course, with technology and satellites and things like that, they ran out of work. So Port of Launceston Authority handed the station back in 2000 to the government.
Okay.
And the government then have leased the land, leased the station to private enterprise, but they have leased the museum to a local group, which stepped in at that time to help the last coxswain here, a chap by the name of Wayne Shipp, who was one of the main chaps that started the museum. And the museum started in 1975. And they built it and built it up and gradually took over the Pilots Row. And now we have a museum with 13 rooms, plus there's a lot of outside items mm-hmm. around the pilot station. But we also have the lease of the foghorn up at the lighthouse.
Right.
Now, the lighthouse, of course, is just the second lighthouse up there now.
Mm-hmm.
And that's an attraction in itself to tourists. But we had, there's a foghorn up there, which was put there in 1929. We have the lease of that, so every Sunday we are allowed to sound the foghorn. It's all been repaired and done up, so it's capable of going.
Mm-hmm.
And so that sounds every Sunday at 12 o'clock.
Right.
And just recently we have got the license to three rooms up at the lighthouse, three in an old cottage.
Right.
And we've set that up as a marine education centre.
Okay.
And that's magnificent.
Mm-hmm.
The couple that have set it up have collected for years items for this. They've had ideas of something like this. it's taken us quite a while to get the license of that. But anyway, now we can only open it at the moment on the Sunday when the foghorns are operating, uh-huh. or for tours and school groups.
Okay.
But they do go up and open it sometimes around lunchtime, and they're getting heaps of visitors, and it's being very popular.
Fabulous.
So that's the that's what we're involved with.
Right. Yeah. So how did you get involved with it, Des? Because you're an old sailor yourself?
No, I'm not an old sailor myself. I was wanting to be a farmer, but I became a teacher instead.
Okay.
And I taught trades in schools. And I always had a bit of an interest in here, and I had an interest in history.
Okay.
And when we came back over here to retire, I knew the chap that was running the museum, and he wasn't that well at that time. So I sort of, because I had practical skills, I sort of helped him a lot. Mm-hmm. And when he passed away, I more or less took over what he was doing and have kept the museum going. So
how long have you yourself been involved with the museum?
Oh, about 25 years.
Wow, okay. Mm-hmm. So, right. And so why maritime? You just have an interest in the water. You're not a sailor. I know, before you build a boat.
Yeah, I probably fell into it really.
Okay.
I'd build a boat. You know, I was interested. I lived here for 5 years in the 60s, and of course I used to be interested in water skiing, and that's why I built a boat. And we used to water ski, and I sort of got a bit interested in boats and things, and I was involved with the four tamer class yachts that they used at the local yacht club. We had the school I taught at had these yachts, and I used to be involved with repairing them every week after they damaged something at the weekend. So I was involved with that. So I sort of got a bit of an interest in the sea.
Mm-hmm.
But I learned a lot off this other chap. You know, he was an encyclopedia.
Right.
So that's how I sort of become involved, sort of fell into it, I suppose, and just went along from there.
So you said there's 13 rooms in the museum. So each room has a theme?
Yes, a different theme for every room. And mm-hmm. and the majority of the items are local maritime history.
Okay.
There's a few ring-ins, but most of it's local maritime history, so...
Yeah. So the room we're sitting in now, this looks like a library.
We're in the actual library and office complex. And okay. we've got as you can see, it's quite a large library of maritime books.
Okay.
And you haven't seen in the little room next door, but that's where all our records are kept,
okay.
our archives.
Mm-hmm.
And we were lucky enough when the Marine Board closed in Launceston and shifted down to Bell Bay, they had a big clean out up there, and... the chaps that were running the museum in those days managed to get a lot of items and material that we could put in this museum. So we've got an excellent archive
mm-hmm.
and an excellent library, I would say, on maritime books. Yeah.
So I noticed as we walked into the library, there's an old diving suit in there
on display. Yes.
What other things could people expect to see if they came? Because 13 rooms, we've got the library here, you've got the archives there.
Yep.
In the other room, what are in the other rooms?
Well, the diving suit is one that was used in the river.
Yes.
We spent a bit of money and had that fixed up and conserved, and we made a case for it, and so that's a star attraction, of course.
Mm-hmm.
But a couple of the other valuable items, we have a yacht outside which is about 105 years old or more.
Yes.
And that's one of the features. Now, inside the museum, we've got, it's not that long ago, we managed to get back the clockwork mechanism that turned the light at the lighthouse.
Right.
And that was pulled out in 1942 and replaced with an electric motor.
Right.
And we've got the old clockwork mechanism
mm-hmm.
Here now, so that's a bit of a feature. It worked on a wire rope on a reel, which had a lot heavy weight on it, and that would just slowly go towards the bottom of the lighthouse and keep the mechanism going to turn the light. Yeah. And, of course, at the end of probably every 8 hours, I would imagine it was the start of every shift, you'd have to wind it back up again, wind the rope back up again if you were the lighthouse keeper.
Right.
But, of course, that's all automated up at the lighthouse now. So that's another item which is a bit of a feature here. We have a lot of shipwreck material. Hebe Reef is a reef which is halfway between the two headlands, Low Head and West Head, and that's the dangerous reef, and there's quite a few shipwrecks on there, probably 8 or 9.
Okay.
And the ships, of course, are still out there under the water.
Right.
Well, most of them. We have a good collection of, especially of two of them, one the Esterapy and one the Eden Home. And the Eden Home was the last of the wool clippers that came into Launceston.
Right.
Because after that was wrecked, they started taking the wool down to Hobart and out by steamer to England.
Okay.
And, of course, the wool clippers took our wool clip from Northern Tasmania back over to London, to England, to the markets over there.
Right.
So that's a very good collection in there. We have the last light at Hebe Reef that was there for 50-odd years.
Okay.
It's not much of it left. It's pretty well rusted away. Now there's a stainless steel one out there with a solar panels on top.
Okay.
This one used to run, being run by battery power in the end.
Mm-hmm.
I think it may have run by oil at the beginning, but... But that's in there. That's a bit of a feature. They're probably the main features.
Okay. Mm. Now, apart from all these 13 rooms with the various exhibits, you've also have got accommodation here, is that correct?
The accommodation at the pilot station is run by the leasee.
Okay.
The government leases it to private enterprise.
Right.
So they've got accommodation here, quite a bit of accommodation. Probably a dozen or 15 units, and so they run that. The museum is actually on a different lease,
okay.
So we just run this part. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Well, it's been fascinating talking to you, Des. You obviously know your history of of Lowhead and the museum. Mate, thank you so much for taking the time to chat with us today. And I'm going to play you a song now, Des. Do you have a favourite artist or a favourite singer or band that you might like me to play for you?
No, but I thought we'd play a local song called Between the Moon and the Sun, which is written by Vince Brophy, who lives here in Lowhead, and he wrote it about a chap that was born in this unit where we're sitting at the moment. His father worked at the pilot station and he was only a child. He's since passed away, over 90, well over 90, and he was one of my wife's uncles and one of the favourite uncles, and I thought that'd be very appropriate.
I think that's an excellent choice, Des. Thank you so much for taking the time to chat with us.
Thank you.
We'll be back with more Roman Oz listeners straight after Between the Moon and the Sun by Vince Brophy.
The kitchen table, listening to old stories from a fisherman and his wife, who painted me this picture. I'm a Georgetown boy, he said, the oldest town in Australia. Fish this river all our lives, my great-grandfather too. He reflected drinking tea, then spoke about the apple jetty, the catches, the mosquito flea, Lady Jillian and her journeys. I rode the boat to the river lamps, Dad filled them with kerosene. 25 bob a month, 5 for me, the quid for Dad. Between the sun and the moon, just my father and I, we rode the river wide, caught the first shooting star. Between the cross and Orion, to make the journey short, Dad always told a story. Between the moon and the sun, as he told me those stories of hardship and tragedy, some met me laughing, but I read between the lines. This was no old Fisher story, but a working river man's, and rivers hold dangers, son. Don't let them take your dreams. As you'll imagine, I was hooked between the song and the story. River, the moon, old time values and yarns. He really loves his river. Take good care of it, he said. As I waved them goodbye, then I wrote this song. Between the sun and the moon, just my father and I, we rode the river wide, caught the first shooting star. Between the cross and Orion, to make the journey short, Dad always told a story. Between the moon and the sun, between the moon and the sun,
caravans have now moved to a brand new location. 11 Clayton Road, Heatherbrae is where you'll find them. Whether you're looking to sell, trade or upgrade, they'll look after you. Check out their range, Silver Valley, Hurricane, Paramount, Road Trip or their flagship Option RV. They won't be beaten on price, so get yourself a knockout deal today. They're open 6 days a week. Why not give them a call on 02-4987-5288 or check out their website, 7thstreetcaravans.com.au. Hi, g'day listeners, Phil C here. This is Roman Oz, and we've got our regular speaker on the program with us, Mr. Jeff Diath from Checkweight. How are you going, Jeff?
I'm really well, Phil. How are you today?
Oh, mate, I'm fabulous. I'm having a great time in Tasmania. I'm actually at a place called Howrah at the moment, which is not that far from Hobart. A lot of people might think, where's Howrah? Well, everybody knows Hobart, so it's about 30 minutes from Hobart. Great place, great little place, and yeah, having a great time here. Got about 3 months
Tasmania
more.
Look,
Tasmania,
yeah,
is
the Tasmania when my wife went there. Lots of history.
Absolutely. So much history here and so many things to see. People, you know, I tell people, oh, we're going to be in Tasmania for 3 months, and they laugh. They go, oh, you can drive around Tasmania in 3 weeks. Sure you can, and not see anything. There's so much stuff here to see. And, of course, it's not that cheap to get here. So if you are going to bring your caravan over here, definitely you want to give yourself at least a few months, 2 to 3 months. Three to 6 months would be better, but at least 2 to 3, you know what I mean?
Right, absolutely agree with you.
Fabulous. So what are we going to discuss today now? We can talk about Tasmania all day, but let's talk about your subject, which is weights and acronyms. What are we going to talk today, Jeff?
Well, I thought we'd talk about, a couple of weeks ago we were talking about payloads, so I thought we'd go into a little bit more in-depth on what is payload, and relating to payload, what is tear? Because a lot of people get confused on the definition of tear.
Absolutely, most people do. And you know what really confuses them is when you see the compliance plate and it'll tell you ball weight at tear. Which means
we can do that as well.
Not a great deal, because once you fill it up, you're no longer at tear. So, all right, let's start it off. The importance of tear and payload weights.
So I suppose the first thing is we need to explain what the definition of tear is.
Okay.
And it's basically the total mass of the caravan with no load, it's unoccupied, and with all the standard equipment fitted.
Right.
So the way I look at it, it's as manufactured.
Right.
So if you're getting a caravan manufactured in Melbourne, for instance, once it's finished the manufacture process, lots of caravan manufacturers will weigh it. And that becomes your tear mass of the caravan.
Yes.
And what it doesn't include, and I suppose, and this comes back to your payload as well, it doesn't include, things like water, gas, and any aftermarket optional add-ons.
Right.
So if you get a different mattress than what is supplied, that which may be heavier, that would increase.
Right.
An extra gas bottle. Sometimes even awnings are not included. And I suppose when you're buying the caravan, sometimes you'll see these things are included and then these things are options.
Okay.
Okay. So it's very important to see what's an option, because the standard equipment should be included in the tear.
Right.
But if you go for that extra gas bottle or the washing machine or a bigger awning or an extra table or an extra TV, they're optional extras, so they're not necessarily included in your tear weight.
Right. Or a larger toolbox or a fridge slide in your toolbox and stuff like that.
Look, an extra to a bigger toolbox and a fridge slide is a very common thing that people add on.
Right.
So it's not actually included. So really good. And you have to think about where that extra weight is as well.
Yes.
It's going to affect the snowball weight. Mm. And I see that quite often where people have added this extra box to put a fridge and a fridge slide in, and then it puts your tow ball weight over and the caravan over.
Yeah.
So any of those things that are added on after and after the manufacture. So going back to being manufactured, and say it's in Melbourne and you go over the Weybridge and they get a Weybridge ticket.
Yes.
And then it gets delivered to Heatherbrae, because that's near where I live. And there's so many caravan salespeople there. And then they add on an extra solar panel, or they put on a bigger awning, or they get you a U-Bute mattress. So all that things that they put on at the dealership aren't included in necessarily, I should say, in your tear mass.
Right. Okay. And the thing is, that's a bit of a mixed bag, isn't it? Because when you buy something that's brand new, they'll show you a brochure of a caravan, and in that brochure it will say tear weight. But if you decide, well, like you said, I'd like a larger toolbox with a fridge slide, automatically that tear weight means nothing.
That's right.
That's right.
And that's a major problem. I mean, I was supposed to weigh yesterday, but it didn't happen because of the rain. Mm-hmm. We're going to weigh it again next week. And this is why sort of one of the reasons I raised it. This gentleman has got a Ford Ranger. He's ordered the caravan. He's done his sums based on what they told him 12 months ago.
Uh-huh.
And then the caravan's been delivered is 180 kilos heavier than what he was told it will be.
Okay, and that's because he's had a lot of extras added.
Well, I'm not sure exactly on that, but it's 180 kilos. So, I mean, until we weigh it and... But it's 180 kilos that he's then lost.
In his payload, exactly.
Yeah, because, he's getting up there on a three-ton caravan and a a three-ton vehicle, he's getting close to his GCM.
Right.
So 100 kilos could be the difference between him being legal and not legal.
Wow.
And safe or not safe.
Yes.
And being able to. And I mean, it's very different if you're just going away for a weekend or if you're going to be travelling full-time in the van.
Mm-hmm.
That 180 kilos is a lot of weight.
Well, that's two water tanks, isn't it? That is two full water tanks, which you may have to sacrifice.
Yeah, or two people, two and a bit people.
Yeah.
If you look at it. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if that's the difference between him having to leave the wife behind and not,
right?
That could be a pretty expensive decision when he gets home.
Oh, well, yeah, I guess. But for some fellas, they'd go, you know what, sweetheart, sorry, you're going to have to miss out and stay home on this trip.
Yeah, but when you get back home, she's sold the house and you've got nowhere to live.
Exactly right. All right, so that's to do with the tear weight. Now, tell us about the payload, because you said but the difference between tear and payload, just to make it really simple for our listeners.
Okay, so in theory, and I say in theory, the payload is the difference between your tear mass and your ATM.
Right.
So, or aggregate trailer mass.
Yes.
So if we'll make it really simple. If your tear weight is 2,000 kilograms.
Right.
And your ATM is 2,500.
Yes.
Then most people assume that they have a 500 kilo payload.
Right.
Now, what you've got to remember is that didn't include water. It didn't include gas.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't include linen, crockery, you know, anything that you're actually putting in the caravan.
Yep.
However, the more I weigh, what I realize is that you can't fully load. If you just weighed every single thing you put in and put in 500 kilos,
yes,
it still doesn't work because it's where you put the weight, which is just as important.
Yes.
So if you put too much weight in the front of the van, then you're going to exceed your tow ball weight.
Right.
And that affects your vehicle weight. So if you think of it from the point of view is if you put 200 kilos over the axles and 300 kilos in front, you're not going to have your caravan balanced correctly.
No.
So the distribution of that 500 kilos is extremely difficult to get right.
Mm-hmm.
So in essence, you don't really get that full 500 kilos.
No.
Unless you're really, really careful and really smart on where you put the weight.
Okay.
So I would say that you probably lose around, you know, 40 or 50 kilos.
Yes.
In not being able to distribute it right.
Okay.
Now, one of the things that's been around for quite a while is, and even the Caravan Industry Association recommend a minimum payload of 300 kilos for single axles and 400 kilos for tandem.
A minimum or a maximum?
Yeah,
okay. And
what I find is that's just not enough.
Okay.
For the majority of situations these days. I mean, 300 kilograms, you know, you can have 180 kilos of water and 20 kilos of gas.
Yes.
Like that's two-thirds of your payload gone.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
100 kilos is just not enough.
No.
And so if you're buying a new caravan, I think for a single axle, you need at least 400, 450. And for a dual axle, you know, a minimum of 500 or 600.
Wow, okay. And how many vans do you see like that have got these type of payloads as minimums? Do you see that often or is it rare?
Look, when I first started 3.5 years ago, very seldom that you would see that. But you also see most people were overweight.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a direct correlation. What I do see a lot, though, is that most vans can have additional payload. It just seems to be an industry standard that they've got these, you know, 300 or 450 figures in their head, and that's what they place them at.
Yes.
So if you're actually buying a new caravan, just say to the guy, like, okay, well, I need more than that. Can I have an increased payload?
Yes.
You know, and I've actually seen that, you know, where I've just said to the, I was weighing a caravan. The guy was looking at whether he could buy it or tow it legally.
Yes.
And we organised and went and weighed it at the dealership. And there was actually nothing wrong with the caravan. It was that he had too much stuff on the vehicle, which he was going to exceed his GCM. So he didn't really have enough payload.
Mm-hmm.
And I just, you know, the salesman was there, was very cooperative, and the owner and myself. And I said, geez, if your caravan was 200 kilos lighter, then you'd be right.
Mm-hmm.
And the salesman walked away, came back and said, I can get the same model without this, this and this.
Yep.
And it's 180 kilos lighter.
Right.
And I said, oh, okay, well, is the ATM the same? He said, oh, no, it'd be less. And I said, well, why? He said, well, that's just what we give in payload. And I said, well, just give him the same payload if it's the same caravan.
Yes.
And, you know, same ATM. He's got an increased payload. So if he, you know, changes vehicles and has a bigger GCM, then he's got more payload.
Right.
Or if he sells the caravan, it's got more payload.
Right.
So it's just in his head that, you know, 450 in this case was what they gave them in payload. So he ended up buying the caravan with a 600 kilogram payload.
Right.
He couldn't actually use the 600 with his BT50 that he had.
Okay.
But if he ever bought another vehicle or sold the caravan, it had more payload.
Okay. So the issue was with the BT50 didn't have enough payload or too much?
No, just he had too much gear on the BT50.
Okay.
So he had drawers, fridge, canopy, roof racks, bikes, all that sort of stuff.
The dreaded drawers.
Yeah, it was the dreaded drawer. So the vehicle was weighing too much for the GCM of the vehicle to have that initial caravan. So, but if he bought a Land Cruiser and had it upgraded and had a 6850 GCM, then he could have utilised the full payload in the caravan.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
So payload to me is king. The caravan manufacturers, especially vehicle manufacturers, focus on towing capacity.
Right.
It's probably one of the least things that I see people exceeding because there's such a focus on it. You can tow this. So they think they're okay.
Right.
In actual fact, I think payload is more important. And we've talked about Land Cruisers and we've talked about other vehicles having a poor payload in the vehicle. And, you know, the vehicle manufacturers don't talk about that, especially in the marketing departments, because that's why they're all overloaded and overweight, because no one thinks about payload. So if you think about payload as being more important than towing capacity, then we would have less people overweight.
Okay. There you go.
So, you know, your vehicle and your caravan payload is probably the most important thing.
Okay, so there you go, listeners. And don't be fooled by, you've got a 200 series, 3.5 ton, you can do anything. No, you can't. Is that right?
Well, you can try, but I weighed a, and this is really interesting, a bit off topic, but it comes back to payload of the vehicle.
Yep.
I weighed a Land Cruiser with a 1976 single axle Millard the other day, which weighed about 1,300 kilos.
Right.
With his wife, two kids, driver, a fridge in the back, he was right on his GVM limit.
Wow. You wouldn't think that in a million years, would you, with a caravan that light?
No, with 110 kilos on the tow ball.
Wow.
So if you whack the 300 kilo tow ball on and a bit more gear in the back, then you're way overweight.
You're way overweight.
Yeah.
Wow.
So, I mean, he's looking at, you know, this is an interim caravan, so he's probably going to upgrade the GVM and for when he gets the new van later this year.
Yep. Well, he's going to need to, isn't he? Yeah. Otherwise, he's going to be in all sorts of trouble, in all worlds of trouble.
Yeah. Or you're leaving the kids with the grandkids, the grandparents, and leaving the fridge behind.
Better idea. Oh, no, not the kid. Not the No. No, we've got to get the priorities straight here, Jeff, okay? We've got to keep the fridge because we've got to keep the beer cool. Let's leave the kids with the grandparents.
But he didn't have drawers, so that's a big plus.
That's a big plus. All right, fair enough. So have we covered it all, Jeff? The importance of tear and payload.
Yes, I think so. I mean, I think it's pretty. It's actually pretty simple, but it's hard to actually get your head around.
Yes.
What is included and what isn't.
Absolutely.
So, you know, so when you're buying a caravan, what is standard? What is an option?
Okay.
I think that's the two things you need to look at. As far as tear, and because most people will take their caravan and weigh it after it's delivered and get, oh, no, it's 100 kilos heavier than the tare weight.
Yeah. Well,
that's because we've added a lot of options on.
And I don't think the dealers really focus on that. You know, they should know how much each item weighs, because if you're going to order a brand-new caravan and they give you the tare weight as X, and then you say, well, I disregard that that standard toolbox. I want a BT ton because I want to put a slide on both sides for my generator and my fridge. Well, automatically, they've probably added 150 kilos because I know those toolboxes are extremely heavy with all that stuff in them. But they don't say, well, hang on, the standard toolbox weighs 80, that one weighs, you know, 150, so therefore there's 70 kilos there. If they knew all the maths of what everything all weighs, they could say to you, well, you know, with all these extras, you're going to have a ballpark of Y, not what we spoke about initially, which was X. They don't bother with that. They just rub their hands together and think, wow, we're going to get a this and a that and whack it all on there, and unbeknownst to you, when the thing's delivered, you're in trouble.
Yeah,
or you have absolutely no payload.
Yeah, and that's happened time and time again, and I see it very often where the salespeople say, mate, you'll be right, and
exactly.
Then I weigh them, and they're not.
They're not.
Yeah. So be aware of what is included and what isn't included in your payload. And your tare and then your payload.
Fabulous. Yep. And try and work it out, or make them work it out. You're spending enough money, try and get a decent figure before you give them a deposit. That's my advice. All right, mate. Well, that's really interesting. What are we going to play for your song for this one?
Well, mate, it's a beautiful summer's day here, so I thought we might play In the Summertime by The Mixtures.
Fabulous song, and I hope when this episode goes to air, it hasn't been bucketing down rain for 4 days. But nonetheless, In the Summertime by The Mixtures is what you want to hear, and we're going to throw it on for you, and we're going to be back with more Roman Oz straight after that. Thank you so much for your time today, Jeff.
Thanks, Phil. Travel safe and enjoy your holiday.
Back with more Roman Oz listeners straight after The Mixtures In the Summertime.
Have a job, go out and see what you can find. If a daddy's rich, take her out for a meal. If a daddy's poor, just do what you feel. Scoot along the lake, do a tunnel or return at 25. When the sun goes down, you can make it good and really fine. We're all friendly, we love daddy, well I mean, we love everybody, cause we do as we please. When the weather's fine, go fishing or go swimming in the sea. We're always happy, life's for living, yeah, that's our philosophy. Sing along with us, dee 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 dee, da dee da da da, yeah, we're happy. Da da da, dee dee da 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 da. Maybe we settle down. If she's rich, if she's nice, bring your friends and we'll all go with the town.
G'day, listeners. Phil C here. This is Roman Oz, and I'm in the town of Derby in Tasmania, and I'm at where they do all these fabulous bike trails. Now, I'm chatting with a young chap. His name is Joe. How are you going today, Joe?
Yeah, good. Thanks, Phil.
Matey, what can you tell us about this place, first of all? The town of Derby, do you know much about it or no?
Yeah, look, it used to be a mining town because the industry here, they were mining tin a while ago.
Okay.
And, look, they discovered it had really good soil or loam used for the trails. It's really sticky, so it's good for on the berms, on the hills.
Okay.
So it's been really booming lately because, you know, business is opening up, people realising the potential.
Okay.
Yeah.
Fabulous. So how many trails do we have approximately, Joe, would you know?
I'd say around 50 to 80 trails around, especially here.
Right.
Yeah.
And I guess they're for all levels of riders?
Yeah. Look, you've got trails ranging from, you know, nice, easy, pretty flat, and then you've got the full-on double black diamonds for the pros. There's something for everyone, man.
Okay, so do you consider yourself a double black pro, Joe?
Or? I'm more of like the intermediate going on the black diamond kind of getting there.
So tell us a bit about the intermediate runs, because this is obviously your area of expertise at the moment. So
yeah.
You graduate to these double black diamond runs.
Yeah. So at the moment, I'm really enjoying a trail called Flicky Sticks.
Flicky
and that's
Sticks.
That's a blue trail.
Okay.
So it comes down from Black Stump, where you'll be dropped off on a shuttle.
Right.
And it's got a bit of climbing, it's got a bit of flow, it's got some good technical, a bit of everything really.
Okay. So how long does the trail like last? What's it?
So that one there.
Is that a short trail or is that like?
Yeah, relatively short, about 20 minutes, I reckon.
20 minutes. And what? And so you call it intermediate. So what makes it intermediate? Is it the terrain or what makes it that?
Yeah, well, there are a few tree roots. I guess there's a bit of, a bit of a slope to it.
Yep.
Also, I think some of the turns are pretty sharp.
Right.
But really, you can walk around most of it. So even if you're a beginner, you'd still have a great time.
Okay. Well, if you're a beginner. So there are easier tracks than that, though,
definitely,
obviously.
Definitely, yeah.
So what's the youngest? Would you think you get, like, little kids out here? Obviously, they don't need training wheels, but, like, what do you think?
Yeah, look, I've seen lots of little kids out today.
Okay.
Especially around the lake.
Okay.
There are lots of great trails for families. And, look, even some of the young ones, man, they go crazy. You see them flying off the jumps even. But, I mean, like, yeah, all skill levels here. It's all accommodated. It's all very central as well.
Okay. So is it more sort of located at the families, or you do get some really serious riders out here?
You do get some serious guys, definitely. I mean, some people come from all around Australia.
Right.
I know there was a guy from Melbourne in yesterday, and he was, just doing all the crazy trails.
Okay.
But, yeah, no, you get everyone up here, really.
Uh-huh. So what's a crazy trail? Tell us about that. That's obviously the double black.
Crazy trail. There's one called Trouty. And you'll probably see it. There's a massive big rock painted like a trout up on the hill.
Oh, yeah, we saw that driving into
Derby. Yeah, so that's renowned as one of the most insane, full-on, steep descent. Lots of rocks, lots of sharp turns, basically vertical.
So what's the secret? Do you just go flat out, or are you meant to use brakes on any of this stuff, or what's the technique?
It's a bit of everything. You've got to kind of have that fearless, ready to go. Making decisions really quickly, picking your line.
Okay.
You got to have good on your brakes and everything.
Uh-huh. So what about your bike? Tell us about your bike, because these are not bikes you'd sort of roam around the streets on, are they? To go and get the milk and bread from the local corner store.
Yeah, no. So you got to have a good mountain bike to be up here.
Yep.
You can go with a hardtail or something, but I'm riding a dual suspension at the moment.
Right.
This is a Scott.
So what's the difference between a hardtail? Does that give you a sore backside, or what's the difference?
A bit, yeah. So hardtail, no suspension on the back.
Okay.
And then a dual suspension, suspension on the front and the back.
So what makes the difference between a hardtail and dual suspension?
Well, dual suspension will give you a lot more cushioning, especially when you're rolling over rocks.
Okay.
And you're going to expect a lot of rocks up here, so you kind of just set it to nice and squishy and you send it down, really.
Okay.
Yep.
So these guys that are riding double black runs, do they have a preference? Are they using like something like yours, dual suspension?
I think they would. They'd probably use a downhill bike, which is even more suspension and a bit more cushioning. And also the way it's built, it's kind of meant for more vertical
Okay.
Higher gears as well, so they can pedal a lot faster down hills.
So this particular bike of yours, it's got a couple of cogs on the back, so that's obviously your gearing system. How many gears you got on this
thing? It's only got about 9 gears on it, uh-huh. So it's good enough to get from, you know, the uphill and downhill.
Right.
They usually don't put a lot of gears on mountain bikes for that reason. You don't want to have too much weight on the back there.
Right. And what about fitness levels? Like, you look pretty fit, so does your mate here. Like, do you have to be really super fit to do this kind of stuff, or...?
Yeah, there are some good trails where you don't need to be super fit.
Okay.
But another thing that's really taken off recently are the e-bikes.
Ah.
And you can hire e-bikes here as well. So
in Derby.
I've seen, yeah, people who just want to give it a go, having a great old time on these e-bikes. So
okay.
They're really popular right now.
So how do you think the e-bike, though, would cope with it? Because they're more like for lazy old seniors who just want to pedal down the road but can't quite make it up the hill.
Yeah, they've managed
to... What about the terrain for the e-bikes?
Yeah, I see what you're saying. I think some of the more technical trails might have a bit of a harder time.
Uh-huh.
But for most of it, with the motor in there, you're rocking these things with the same suspension,
okay.
Same kind of gears.
Right.
Yeah, you plough over most things.
Okay. So, Joe, how long have you been doing it? And what made you take it up, first of all? Because it sounds pretty dangerous on some of these double blacks, which you're not quite at. But
yeah.
Obviously that's your goal, right?
Getting there.
Yep.
Well, I've been riding probably for about, probably since I was very young,
mm-hmm.
for about 3 or 4. But then mountain biking, kind of riding around Hobart a bit. And then, yeah, coming up for holidays here,
uh-huh.
working it out, because I've got a younger brother as well.
Right.
And we've both been, you know, trying out different trails, seeing what works. But yeah, it's been a bit of a journey.
A journey? Is it a journey you think you're going to continue doing until you crack all these double black runs?
Oh, definitely, yeah. No, I'm never going to stop riding.
Uh-huh.
You know, you can do the same trail again and again, really. It's so much fun.
So... I said crack there. Have you actually cracked anything? You broken any bones, fallen off, and you taken any skin off?
Not yet. Had a few grazes, but no, I'm very fortunate so far. I hope to keep it that way.
Okay. And for the double blacks, these real serious hardcore guys, do many of these guys get injured or no?
Yeah, look, you do get some injuries.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I think someone last time I was here heard of the injury that happened on Trouty, so you got to be careful.
Yep.
Injuries do happen, but look, you can get a lot of protective gear and, you know, ride at your own level.
I suppose you've got to know your own capabilities.
Own capabilities, that's it.
For sure. Yeah. So with me, I think I'd rather go up there in an armoured tank or something.
Yeah,
I don't know
send
about
it down
a
the trails on that.
Yeah.
That'd be a side arc.
Maybe a four-wheeler or something and just...
That'd be great.
Amble down there in low range.
Yeah, just sending off all the jumps, getting some good airtime.
All righty. Fabulous. Joe, thank you so much for taking the time to chat with us.
Yeah, thank you, Phil. It's been great.
Mate, I'm going to play you a song now. You got a favourite Aussie band or Aussie
singer?
Yeah,
look, my favourite Aussie band's probably the Rubens.
Okay.
And my favourite song's Hoops.
Hoops?
Yeah, Hoops by the Rubens.
Sounds very appropriate.
Great Aussie track.
Did you do many hoops? I saw a guy riding in here before and he was on one wheel.
Yeah.
What was that all about? He was riding through on the back wheel.
Doing a few wheelies,
Nah,
great fun.
All righty. Well, we're going to be back with more Raymond Oz. Thank you so much for your time,
Joe. Yeah, thank you.
Good on you, mate. We'll be back with more Raymond Oz listeners straight after the Rubens Hoops.
Bloodstains won't make it matter. Got good things, got you. Hoops and everything. Get back, never get back too soon. Are you lonely? Are you there when I'm not in the room? Are you only? Only a part of this when you choose. Is it real? Is it something that you cannot touch? Do you feel? Do you feel that you feel too much? Bloodstains won't make it matter. Got good things, got you. Hoops and everything. Get back, never get back too soon. Bloodstains make confusing patterns. They lead me to you. Hoops and everything. Get back, never get back too soon. Something crazy. Something changing in the way you talk. You were lately you were trying to be the one on top. Come on down, come on and give it to me like you should. Gonna drown, I give up and get on with it, life is good. Right.
stains won't make it matter. Got good things, got you. Hoops and everything. Get back, never get back too soon. Get back, never get back too soon. Get back, never get back too soon. Get back, never get back. Get back, never get back. Get back, never get back too soon. Get back, never get back too soon. Yes, it's true. Get back, never get back. Get back, never get back too soon. Get back, never get back too soon. Get back, never get back. Get back, never get back.
We hope you enjoyed the show, listeners.
If you missed any, check out our Facebook page, Spotify, or romanoz.com.au.
Tune in next week for more
Roman Oz.